Yeah, okay. So, so I.
Sorry.
हाँ ओके सो जुगनू माता जी ओके एंड जगत जननी माता जी ओ यू हैव ऑलरेडी जॉइन ओके एंड मदर ओके मदर व्हाट अबाउट योर वन मोर फ्रेंड ऑफ योर्स वाज गोइंग टू जॉइन
आई वाज ट्राइंग हर नंबर बट शी इज नॉट गेटिंग हर फोन
अच्छा ओके ओके बट यू जस्ट फाइंड आउट इफ शी इज गोइंग टू जॉइन लाइक ऑन अ रेगुलर बेसिस so then I can add her in the group.
Okay. Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay, so is Jugnu Mataji also there now? Okay, I think she will join after some time. okay, so any questions or any comments on the last class? If you remember, we had covered eight chapter, and there were many do's and don'ts in that eight chapter. And then, if you remember, we had also discussed that how Srila Prabhupada had yes mentioned his purpose in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that in all these details, you know, they are actually kind of you know they were meant for the smarthas. They were written. Gopal Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. If you remember, we had read the purport. So Sanatan Goswami wrote the Hari Bhakti Vilas, keeping in mind for the Smartha Brahmanas. Okay, so it is kind of difficult to find out what are the Vaishnava principles that one should follow from these things. So we have to remember that although we have discussed all these things, but ideally. It's not possible to follow all of these. Okay. So, and whichever particular rule, if someone would like to follow, then according to the practical situation, they have to consult their guru, Siksha, Diksha guru, and then they should do it. Because we have to remember that ours is a preaching movement. So, for preaching purpose, we have to adjust according to time, place, circumstance, and many rules will be compromised. And naturally, there will be some offenses by default. Okay, so you know, while preaching, we take shelter of our Guru and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and by their order, we are doing it. So they only can actually make us rid of all the offenses while performing devotional service. So we have discussed already about the Nama Aparad and Seva Aparads, right? So there are more than 60 Seva Aparads, and there are 10 offenses to the holy name, correct? So that's what we have discussed till now. And if someone is joining for the first time, then I request them to refer to the previous classes. The recordings are available in the same Google Drive. Okay. Yeah. So anyone has any particular question from the last class? Okay. So let's start with the ninth chapter. so who can read today? Actually, you know, all these things, now Rupa Goswami is just providing sastric evidences. He has already described the 64 items of devotional service. And so he's just providing the sastric evidences. And Prabhupada is adding some of his, you know, own realizations in the Nectar of Devotion purports. But, like, you know, even Prabhupada is also using the same sastric evidences which Rupa Goswami has used in Bhakti Samrit Sindhu. Okay. So, so these chapters, you know, generally we just have to go through it because the acharyas also, they have not given so much commentary on that. So we'll just go through it and wherever there is comment or question, we'll discuss that. So who will take the lead to read?
Okay, I can do it, Prabhuji.
Okay, Mataji, yeah, please continue.
Okay.
So, Nectar of Devotion, ninth chapter.
Yeah. Hare Krishna, everyone. Chapter 9, Further Considerations of Devotional Principles. Blasphemy. One should not tolerate blasphemy of the Lord or His devotees. In this connection, in the 10th canto, 74th chapter, verse 40 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukhdev Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj, "My dear king, if a person after hearing blasphemous propaganda against the Lord and his devotees does not go away from that place, he becomes bereft of the effect of all pious activities."
Yeah, okay. So, please continue. Yeah.
In one of the Lord Chaitanya's Shikshashtaka verses, it is stated, the devotee should be more tolerant than the tree and more submissive than the grass. He should offer all honor to others, but may not accept any honor for himself. In spite of Lord Chaitanya's being so humble and meek as a devotee, when he was informed about the injuries inflicted on the body of Sri Nityananda, he immediately ran to the spot and wanted to kill the offender, Jagai and Magai. This behavior of Lord Chaitanya is very significant. It shows that a Vaishnava may be very tolerant and meek, foregoing everything for his personal honor, but when it is a question of the honor of Krishna or his devotee, he will not tolerate any insult. Shall I continue, Prabhu?
Yeah.
There are three ways of dealing with such insults. If someone is heard blaspheming by words, one should be so expert that he can defeat the opposing party by argument. If he is unable to defeat the opposing party, then the next step is that he should not just stand there meekly, but should give up his life. The third process is followed if he is unable to execute the above-mentioned two processes, and this is that one must leave the place and go away. If a devotee does not follow any of the above-mentioned three processes, he falls down from his position of devotion.
Okay. So, like blasphemy. So one should not tolerate the blasphemy of the Lord or the devotee, right? So, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says in Shikshashtakam prayers that devotee should be more tolerant than a tree and more submissive than the grass. So he should all offer, you know, respect to others, but he should not demand respect. So now, many times, you know, it happens that devotees, they have to tolerate. And sometimes they feel that I should revert back. So that should not happen, actually. Whatever circumstances and situations they arise, if it is for the personal, you know, it is... when it comes only... to the devotees and to the Lord, if there is some blasphemy of the Lord and the devotees, then only we have to revert back. We have to defend, basically. But when it comes to personal level, then we should always tolerate. So this is something that we have to, you know, always keep in mind, because tolerating situations is not so easy. Very difficult, actually. Extremely difficult. It sounds so nice, so sweet. But actually, it is very bitter to follow, correct? So, now there is a difference between to blaspheme someone and to correct someone. So, what is the difference between blasphemy and correction? Because what happens sometimes, you know, when some devotees might say certain negative things about other devotee. And then we might feel that, you know, why the devotee is blaspheming. So is there a difference between blaspheming and correcting a devotee? Or to, you know... So what is the difference then?
Yes, sir, I think there is a difference in that sense. Blasphemy is grossly insulting.
Grossly insulting. Okay, yeah. So insulting is basically insulting someone, insulting some devotee. So see, what is the motivation behind that insult? Like, you know, sometimes the spiritual master can also insult insult his disciple in front of many devotees. So is that blasphemy?
No. Because it is for his good he is doing it.
Correct, yeah. So the motivation is the most important thing, the intention and the motivation. So now, blasphemy particularly means that because we are envious of that person or that devotee, And even if there is no fault in the devotee, still will do it just to defame them or to bring them lower. So that is the meaning of blasphemy. Purposefully we are doing it, even though there is no fault in that devotee, or neither he has done something wrong. But we are just trying to correct that person because we feel jealous or we feel envious of the devotee. So that we should refrain. We should strictly avoid that. Okay, and now correcting a devotee. So as Madhali was saying, the intention is important. So now, too many devotees, they have so good intention for, you know, so many other devotees. So does it mean that each and every devotee should, you know, start correcting each and everyone, even though their intention is good?
No, Prabhuji. Only
the person in a position of authority can correct the other person.
Exactly. Yeah. So only authorities, only those who are in the position to correct someone, they only should correct. So now, who is going to decide who is the authority? That is the question now. We are going step by step. So who will decide who is the authority?
Prabhuji, if devotees are same level, like a Madhyama devotee or whatever, then also they can correct each other because they are in a friendly, Sakha Bhav kind of thing.
Okay, so Mataji said that equals can correct. Okay, yeah, so that is true.
It also takes relationship among the devotees, Prabhuji.
Sorry?
They should take high spirit.
Yeah, so that is very important actually. See, as Mataji was saying, that equals can correct. But the thing is that there are many equals we have, many friends we have. And not everyone can take everyone's opinion very seriously. Okay, even amongst equals also, sometimes it happens that someone might advise you, but then you might not be inspired enough to take that advice. Or you might feel that person himself is not following and he's advising me, even though he might be equal, right? So see, basically, here, according to etiquette, the devotee is going to decide the authority. Okay, so for the devotee, his main authorities are the Diksha and the Siksha Guru and the temple authorities. So like, for example, the temple president or the commander, you know, or the leader under whom you are, you know, performing bhakti or seva. So those devotees are authorities. But that also depends. Now, for example, if you are in a temple, you are doing some seva in the temple, you are not connected to the temple president directly, you are not taking guidance from him, but just because he is a temple president, so obviously he has a authority over you. But authority in what sense? It does not mean that he will come and start telling you that you should do this like this and all like this and that, you know, like commenting on your sadhana or service or like that. So he does not have that right actually, unless you give him that right. Okay, so the role of temple president is connected to management. So whatever there are problems in the temple which are connected to management, you know, if he feels that you are creating some problem in the temple, then he has a right to correct you. But he cannot personally target you for your, you know, unless and until you accept his views and opinion and you are willing to take his advice, right? So this thing we have to keep in mind. Regarding our sadhana, regarding our, you know, how to do bhakti, how to do service, all these are the exclusive privileges of Diksha and Siksha Guru. So the devotee will decide who is his Siksha Guru. So some devotees, they might, if there are equals, you know, so that devotee might feel inspired by his equal. And then he will give the right to that equal to, you know, criticize or correct him. So that is up to the devotee. If the devotee is comfortable and overall at the end of the day he is inspired by the association and the correction of that equal, then he can surely take advice from that devotee. But if he is unable to take the advice, then he can take it from superiors. So superiors, you know, anyways, we take guidance because we assume that they are more advanced, they are more experienced, and based on that, we take their guidance. At the same time, it is not necessary to take guidance from each and every senior Vaishnava. So, as you know, in Narahari Sarkar's Krishna Bandhamrit, he has explained all these principles in detail. And he has, you know, he has very clearly stated that even if an advanced Vaishnava will come And if you say something different from your Diksha and Shiksha Guru, then you are not obliged to follow him. In fact, if you hear him and if you start following him, and if that contradicts your in Shiksha of your Diksha and Shiksha Guru, then you are like a prostitute. That's what he says in Krishna Vadnamrit, that this is not the right way. This is a cheating process. So the proper etiquette is that if you hear something from advanced Vaishnava, and if you feel that it is contradicting your guru's instruction, then you should go to your guru, whoever Diksha and Shiksha Guru, you should tell them, and then the guru will try to reconcile. Okay, he will try to explain you what you should do. And whatever final decision, final instruction he will give you, that you have to follow. So, the devotee is supposed to follow only the Diksha and Shiksha Guru. Okay, so although we have many devotees, but with heart and soul, we follow only the Diksha and Shiksha Guru. Okay, and who is the Shiksha and Diksha Guru? That the devotee will decide. Okay, and one more thing, that the devotee, they should have some devotee to correct them. If there is not a, see, at least one devotee should be there to correct us. If there is no devotee who is going to correct us, then spiritual life is going to be whimsical. We are just doing what we like to do. That's it. And we are not taking any guidance. And that will lead us nowhere. Because see what happens, when you decide to do something on your own without the permission and blessings of the Shiksha and Diksha Guru, the mercy that is coming, flowing from the Lord, will stop at that point and it will not flow to you because you are breaking the connection. You're breaking the chain. Okay. So that is the reason it is extremely important to to always try to follow the and to seek the permissions of senior devotees, our Shiksha and Diksha Gurus. So whatever new endeavor we are also going to do, that also we should take blessings from them, just as a matter of etiquette. Now actually in ISKCON there are many things that we can automatically do, independently do. Like for example, you don't have to ask for permission for book distribution or Harinam Sankirtan or prasad distribution. Any kind of preaching activity, you don't require permission from, authority. But just as a matter of etiquette, it's always good to, convey the message and take their blessings for this endeavor. And no devotee will not give you permission, because in ISKCON, everyone knows that preaching is the essence of our movement. So one has to still follow the etiquette. And, these all things are pleasing to the Lord. So, the Lord is seeing all these things, And that is the reason why we have to do whatever is given in Shastra and according to Guru and Sadhus. Okay. So, we are the ones who are going to decide the authorities, and then we have to follow them. That is the only way. So, in the Upanishad also it is said that Yasya Deve Para Bhakti Yatha Deve Tatha Guru. That unless and until we develop intelligent faith in the instructions of the spiritual master and the Lord, faith in the Lord simultaneously, then only the purports of Vedas are revealed to us. Okay, and then obviously we know. See, one thing which is very striking in the example of Srila Prabhupada, that in case of Prabhupada, he had implicit faith in the Holy Name. Everyone knows that, right? Like, I think I have shared this earlier probably, or maybe I shared with some other friend before. But recently, I heard that Prabhupada actually, when he took sannyas, so that time the yajna fire sacrifice was going on and there was a lot of noise of the mantras and all that. And Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who is the godbrother of Prabhupada, he was in the background and he was actually performing kirtan. He was doing kirtan of Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So because the, mantra's voice became louder, Akinchan Das Babaji Maharaj also, he was kind of like, going into the background and his voice was like, it was not so clear. So then Prabhupada, what he did, he actually saw Babaji and he signed to him that please increase your chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra, increase your voice. So at that point of time, Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji realized how much faith Prabhupada had actually in the Hare Krishna Mahamantra rather than the Yajna Mantras. And when Prabhupada was passing away in Vrindavan, so that time all his godbrothers were assembled. That time there were Bhakti Sarang Goswami Maharaj, I think, or and then Bon Maharaj was there. So three, four godbrothers of Prabhupada were there, who were first sent to Germany, I guess, by Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur for preaching, but they were not successful. They had to come back. And that time, Akinchan Das, Krishna's Babaji Maharaj were also present. And, you know, he, in front of everyone, he actually glorified Srila Prabhupada, and he told others that why were you not successful, and why our, you know, Bhaktivedanta Swami was successful. And then he said that because during his sannyas ceremony, you know, he actually showed his faith in the holy name. And from that point onward, conviction that this devotee is going to spread the holy name throughout the world because he has implicit faith in the holy name. Okay, so now this is the aspect of Prabhupada having complete faith in the holy name. But at the same time, we should also remember that he had complete faith in the instruction of spiritual master also. So it was not just the holy name, faith in the holy name. He had faith in the spiritual master's instruction also. Like you will see many times, you know, Prabhupada says this point in his purport that, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur ordered him to go to the West and preach. And somehow, you know, Prabhupada made that order as a life threshold, correct? And that's how we spread the, you know, holy name throughout the world. So both things have to be there. Faith in the authority, in the spiritual master, at the same time, faith in the holy name. So one cannot say that I have faith in the holy name, but I don't have any faith in the authorities, or don't have, you know, I cannot follow anyone. I just have faith in Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So that kind of thing is, you know, not, because these are two tracks, the track of the spiritual master and track of Krishna. So holy name is not different from Krishna. So the Shastra say that simultaneously one should have faith. So if your faith in the holy name is 50%, then that 50% faith you should have in your spiritual master. If your faith in holy name is 100%, then simultaneously it will be 100% for your spiritual master. It cannot be low. So it is like that. Okay, so we have to remember this principle.
A piece of
so any questions or any comments on this?
Fabric, so that when it's done in half,
because, see,
right size.
Shall I continue?
Yeah, I will just add one point that, see, when we say that we have complete faith in the holy name, but actually, when is the effect of the holy name fully realized? When it is fully realized? Only when we have the blessings of the Guru. Okay, so it is contradicting to say that we have faith, complete faith in holy name, but do not have faith. So that's absurd. It's really bogus. Does not have any, you know, substance. So this is how we have to understand that both things, they should go together simultaneously. Your faith in your spiritual master, his words, instructions, and at the same time, faith in Krishna. So see, if and one cannot say that I have faith in my Guru, I will follow him, but I won't chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, or, you know, my faith in the holy name is not so strong. So that is also another kind of a contradiction. So both faith in both things should grow simultaneously, because Guru is not God. So he will never want that you worship him. Otherwise, it will just become idolatry, correct? It will be like, you know, you are just worshipping some idol. And Guru is a representative of God. So he has to connect you to God. So he has to be selfless. He should be free of any ulterior motives, right? So Guru will give Krishna, and Krishna will give you faith in Guru, like that. So both things will simultaneously work. Yeah, Prabhuji, you had a question?
You mentioned that, you know, when Prabhupada was about to leave the mortal body, there were two other Prabhujis who were not successful, and they had come back.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that, and you said the context was succeeded because he had faith in Mahamantra and spiritual master.
Correct, yeah.
Does it mean that the people who did not succeed did not have faith or in the spiritual master?
Yeah, that's what Akinchan Das Babaji Maharaj meant, you know, by saying this. So, and actually later, if you see, Prabhupada writes in his letters and in a couple of other places, you know, he actually criticizes Bon Maharaj. And he says that how Bon Maharaj, you know, later on, he actually deviated. He did not follow his guru's instruction, and he deviated. So that is the reason, you know, he did not achieve success. So this is there in his letters and even some of his purports in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this, yeah, so this, see, it's very simple to understand, you know, it's a simple concept to understand that without a guru, you are nowhere, you are nowhere. That is as simple as it is, you know. Otherwise, we are just trying to do something which we like. It becomes a sense gratification. Even spiritual life can become a sense gratification, you know, if we do not properly follow the authorities. And if you do not please the Vaishnavas. So,
but the question was, Prabhuji, that in spiritual world, should we really measure ourselves by the materialistic yardstick of success? We attempted. Krishna's mercy was, you know, you can only do so much. Can you look at it from that perspective, or that is not right?
Sorry, I did not get your question.
The question is, Prabhuji, now, we in the spiritual world set out to do a task.
Spiritual world? You are talking about spiritual world.
Because now there is a material world and there is a spiritual world.
Okay, but so we are in the material task, world right now.
But our task is spiritual.
Yeah, okay. So you are saying in the material world, we are doing spiritual activity like that.
Okay.
Yeah, we are
in devotional service. So, in devotional service, do we have to have the yardstick of the real world of success and failure?
See, the goal should be clear that we are doing it for the pleasure of the Lord. And we want to do it for the sake of preaching. If you are doing it for these two reasons, then you can even get material success. And you know, so the intention has to be clear. Like you don't want material success because you want to show off, or you develop pride that, you know, I'm better than so many others. So that should not be the main motivation. So, for example, when Ambarish Prabhu, Alfred Ford, so when he went to Prabhupada, you know, he said that, Prabhupada, I would like to leave everything and I would just like to surrender to you. And Prabhupada said, actually, if you want to surrender, then don't leave anything. Continue your business, expand. And same thing he also said to George Harrison of Beatles, that, you know, he was a popular figure of United States, you know, and he was popular all over the world also because of his music. So Prabhupada understood that, and you know, the Bhagavad Gita also says that, yajar acharati shrestha tadat anuvartate. If you remember that sloka, which says, whatever great actions a great man will perform, ordinary men will follow that, correct? So that is the reason why Krishna conscious devotees are supposed to be leaders of society, because they are the ones who are going to lead them. So if you are getting success, then obviously we engage that in service of the Lord. Okay. But that should not distract us from our original goal. So it should not make us pride. Or then we should not start feeling that other devotees are inferior and, you know, we are superior. So Krishna gives each and every devotee, he has given special ability to each and every devotee, and accordingly they engage their abilities in the service of Lord. So if one is a poor person, then he will do some, you know, service in the temple, and through that service he will attract others. So that is also preaching for him. So one cannot say that only a person who is earning money and who is conducting preaching programs is successful. And he is only dear to the Lord. Any person or any devotee who has sincere desire to preach, and he can do it through any service, whether in the temple or outside the temple, or whichever form it can come. Okay. So see, now we have pujaris in the temple. So that is why the deity worship is so elaborate. It is so nice. And that is attracting so many people. Although they are not directly going outside and they are not directly speaking to people, but because they are there in the background, that is the reason why we are able to go outside and we are able to distribute books or do Harinam Sankirtan or speak to them or conduct seminars and all. So you have to see holistically, you know, all devotees, they are assisting each other, because temple worship is also one of preaching, you know, temple, opening temples. And, you know, today only I read, someone had sent a quote, Prabhupada's quote, that temple is like a oasis on a desert. You know, when you go to desert, you are always looking for water. So similarly, those who are frustrated in material world, they are looking for a society where they can go and inquire about God. So temples are the main centers for that, right? So we have to understand from this point of view. Everything is connected to preaching, ultimately, in ISKCON. Okay. So does that answer your question, Prabhu?
Yes. So that, you know, you can understand from what I'm trying to say. Now, for example, let's say we have book distribution.
Okay.
We have decided that, you know, our guru gives us a target of selling 10 Bhagavad Gita.
Okay.
And we only sell 5.
Mm-hmm.
So now, what do you call this? Is it success or failure?
If you have tried your best, if you have given your best, and I think that is something that you have to judge, because Krishna knows everyone's, you know, desire, everyone's effort and all that. So if you have not given your best, then obviously it's a failure, because you have not, you know, pleased your guru. You have failed to please guru in some regards. So see, the guru is not going to be displeased, because at least you have done 5 books, right? But you could have done more, you know. Guru will have faith that you could have done more. So, you know, he would be the most pleased if you could have done 10 books, right? See, there are 3 kinds of disciples, as we know. That one disciple, the third class disciple, is that a guru will give instruction and, you know, he will still not follow that. The second class disciple will wait for the instruction of guru and then he will follow it. And the first class disciple is someone, even without, you know, first taking instruction from the guru, he will just please the guru because he understands what the guru wants from him. You know, he does not have to wait for instruction. So, this is what we are trying to achieve. You know, we strive to achieve the first class position. That, see, if you already know your guru's heart, you know, you understand what your guru wants from you, then you are always, you know, trying to please him. So then you don't have to wait for instruction, correct? So, see, actually speaking, the target is given so that the devotees are enthused to do book distribution. It is not, see, if there is no target, then let's say, for example, if no one gives you any target, then you will be satisfied even by distributing 2 books, right? And then rest of the time you just keep engaging in, you know, material sense gratification or maybe some other things. So if you have been given 10 books target, then whatever extra time you are getting, you that also you will engage in the service of the Lord, right? So a first class disciple, he will, you know, what in what way you will consider the instruction, he will say that guru has given 10 books, but I'm not satisfied. I want to go beyond that. I want to do 20 books. So his target might be 10, but in the heart he will feel that I will do 50 or 100 books like that. So this is the difference. Okay. So this is how we have to understand. And one thing is there that guru always instruct the disciples according to their nature. So if some devotees, they are hesitant, they are not able to speak openly, and they are not able to distribute books like that, then guru will give some other instruction. Like, you know, maybe they are meant for doing some service in the temple. So, like, if all the devotees are going for book distribution, then maybe the devotee, other devotees will prepare prasadam for them. So they will assist in that book distribution. You know, depending on the nature, he will incline all the devotees, engage all the devotees like that. So that is the expertise of a guru or a leader. That he will understand the nature of a disciple and accordingly he will engage those disciples in the service. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can I repeat the 3 types of disciples?
Yeah, first class, second class, third class. So, I mean, you know, it is like, you know, the first class bogey, second class bogey and third class bogey in train, like that. So that's the analogy I can give you. A first class disciple will not even wait for the instruction of spiritual master because he understands the heart of the spiritual master, what he wants. So he will do something beyond
not waiting for
instructions of the spiritual master. Yeah. The second class will, what he will do? He will wait for the guru's instruction and then he will execute. Okay. And the third class, even after the guru's instruction, he will still not follow. So at least we want to be in the second class category. Yeah. So yeah, okay. So any other questions or comments? Now, one more thing related to the instruction of Guru. See, in ISKCON, Prabhupada is a preeminent...
Hare Krishna?
Yeah.
My one question is, should we measure our success in our spiritual life?
Huh? Should we?
Should we measure our success in our spiritual life?
Measure our success means what? In spiritual life means what?
Measurement. Means for example, yeah, if we are doing sadhana, so
okay.
So how can we know that we are doing best of best sadhana?
Yeah, so by
material world is very hard to know.
Yeah, so that is something that you have to ask your authorities, your Diksha and Siksha Guru. So you have to ask them regularly. What I'm doing and what should I do more? So we have to inquire submissively, we have to render service to the authorities, and then they will give us their realization or they will bestow their mercy. So we have to follow that. So that's how we measure, and they will actually tell us that what stage we are, and our Goswamis, the Acharyas, they have already given the stages, how to know what stage we are at, whether we are at Saddha, at Sadhu Sangh, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhav, Prema. So which particular stage we are that the Acharyas, Goswamis have given already to us. So we have to identify the symptoms of that particular. So if we are steady in our bhakti, in our sadhana, in our seva, everything is steady, then and at the same time we have also cultivated humility, then we understand we are kind of at the stage of Nishtha. Nishtha means steadiness. And if we have anarthas, then we understand we are at the stage of anartha nibriti. Okay, so and if you are only doing bhajan, but there is no significant purification, then we are at the stage of bhajana kriya. Okay, and then if there is spontaneous liking, a lot of greed has developed, and we are trying, engaging our senses and everything throughout the day for the pleasure of the Lord, then we understand we are at the stage of ruchi and probably asakti. So the senior devotees, they are supposed to know all these things and they will guide accordingly. Okay. Yeah, okay.
So then I want to ask you that if one devotee is directly follow Srila Prabhupada in the system, and in between he does not follow any...
Yeah, actually, is someone outside? Because there is some disturbance. I am not able to clearly hear Mohit Prabhu's voice. Mohit Prabhu, can you speak a little louder?
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I am saying that if one devotee directly follows Srila Prabhupada's instruction and he does not follow any present guru of his own, so can he get success?
Okay, so did you understand the question, all of you? Very important question.
No, Prabhuji, we didn't understand.
Can't hear.
Okay, so Prabhuji asked this important question that if a devotee is following Prabhupada's instruction, but he does not want to follow any guru's instruction or anyone who is under Prabhupada, after Prabhupada. So is he still advancing or is he still attaining success in spiritual life? So what is the answer for this?
We have an example in Bangalore, ISKCON, Prabhuji.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's the Twit Temple. Yeah, so what is the answer for this?
No, Prabhuji, he cannot progress.
Why?
Because he can't supersede his immediate guru.
No.
Let's see if they consider only Prabhupada as guru, and they don't want to accept anyone else as guru. So is that a true following?
Actually, not true, guru.
Okay, so how it is not true?
Because there is a
right now limit.
Huh?
Vaishnav lineage will break.
Vaishnav
lineage.
Correct, exactly. So, Parampara is going to break. And what is the instruction of Prabhupada? If you see in his purpose, yes, in his letters, his instruction is clear to take shelter of devotees, to take diksha from his followers. So actually, to say that Prabhupada, you know, if a devotee is following Prabhupada, and then, you know, at the same time to say that he does not want to follow any, successor of Prabhupada, it's contradiction. Because he's not following Prabhupada's instruction, you know, and Prabhupada very clearly says that if you want to please me, see, what does Bhagavad Gita also say? What does Krishna say? You know, that if you want to please me, in the Adi Puran, Krishna tells to Arjuna that those who claim to be my devotees, they're actually not my devotees. But those who claim to be the devotees of my devotees, they are truly my devotees. Right? So similarly, to say that only Prabhupada is there and then not to follow anyone else means you are, as Sumit Prabhu said, you are breaking the parampara. You are not trying to become the servant, but you are directly trying to come in touch with the Acharya. So one could also say that why to follow Prabhupada also? One could say that I will follow Bhakti Sarvansar Thakur, right? And one could say that why to follow him also? That way one can go on to Brahma. And then even Brahma also, you know, skip just directly to Krishna. So this kind of tendency is completely bogus. And there is no Shastric evidence for that. That after Prabhupada, no one is there. You know, this is a recently invented method. Because thinking that, you know, only Prabhupada is the only, you know, guru. But they don't understand that Prabhupada, you know, although he was a founder Acharya, but at the same time, he's also representing a Guru Tattva principle, and Guru Tattva is eternal. So it can come through any form, by any means. So in disciplic succession, it will come, right? So if you say that only Prabhupada, then you are breaking the, parampara in one sense. The diksha has to be followed in parampara, you know, like one can say that even though we have a direct relation with Prabhupada, but we are not breaking parampara because we have Shiksha Gurus, because the other devotees are our Shiksha Gurus. But that is also not correct, because the diksha also has to be taken, you know, in the succession, in the parampara. And how do we know that Prabhupada actually accepts them? The Prabhupada does not give any, you know, there is no written proof by Prabhupada that after he goes away, you know, all the disciples should be brought to him for diksha. He has clearly given in his letters and everywhere else that those, you know, in fact, during the last days of Prabhupada, you know, he clearly told that the devotees who are waiting for initiation from him, he said that they will be, you know, you will be the disciples of my disciples. He very clearly said these things. So we have to understand like that. Okay. So Mohit Prabhu, does that answer your question?
Yes, Prabhu. Yes. Prabhu, I have one more question, Prabhu.
Yeah.
So, I have one more question.
Yeah.
Prabhuji, we had Kitanmen Rani Prabhuji in our temple, and he was born plus Ashram. He did 24 hour seva in the temple. And he had some conflict with the management, so he left the temple. And 1 month before he came to the Panipat, some devotee invited him without discussing with the management. And management told the devotees that why you invite Chaitanya Murari Prabhuji without taking my permission. So he is right or wrong?
Okay, so this is... Yeah, so this is... Okay, so did everyone hear the question?
No, we couldn't hear it.
Yeah. So...
temple was
made. Yeah, so he's saying that one devotee was doing a lot of seva in temple, but then he had some issues with management, so he left temple. And then after that, after some time, he was invited to some place. And I think he gave a class or something. And then the management or the temple management of the authority said that, you know, why you have invited Chaitanya Murari Prabhu again. So first of all, see, this is a management-related thing. we should not name devotees. We should, whenever we are giving someone's example, we should not try to give their name. We should say that, okay, there was some devotee and, you know, he had problems in management and he left and all. So, because unnecessarily, you know, it will give some, create some bad impression for the devotee. So we should not do that. So see, in this circumstance, because see, I don't know the situation, and generally the management and the spiritual authorities, they should go parallel. That is the reason the GBC has come with the paper called as parallel lines of authority, which means that although you have the spiritual, you know, gurus, Diksha and Shiksha Guru, at the same time you have your temple management and Prabhupada, and it is the instruction of Prabhupada. Prabhupada has said that the GBC is a final managing authority on all managing related things. So you could say that the temple authorities will decide, not your guru. Whoever is the temple president or the temple GBC, they will be the ones who will be deciding the rules in the temple. Okay, and your gurus are supposed to cooperate with them. Okay, because Prabhupada has, you know, repeated his instruction so many times that if you want to show my love, you know, if all of you want to show your love to me, then you all should cooperate with each other. So that is the reason the parallel lines of authority say that the spiritual authorities should take a humble position in terms of temple management, and the temple management should also take humble position in terms of the spiritual authorities, and they should both cooperate. So they should discuss together. If there's some issue, then they have to very humbly represent the case, and they should come to some conclusion so that it will not confuse the followers or the devotees in the temple. Okay, so the cooperation spirit has to be there. Okay, so I actually, Mohitru, your voice is not very clear.
I want to say something.
Yeah, now it is clear.
Yes, Chaitanya Gauri Prabhuji was not a devotee in the temple. He was our Shiksha Guru in the temple. He do 24 hour teaching in the temple. So
yeah.
He had some conflict with the management, so he left. And some devotees who think that he imagined Shiksha Guru, he gave devotees in Michael Ben in Panipat lecture outside the temple. Then management told him,
yeah, so see, I don't know what is happening, like, because it's outside, like, I don't know, you know, what's the situation, what's the background, but and probably the devotees who are also outside, they also might not know the internal reason. So maybe, you know, Chaitanya Murari Prabhu or some whichever devotee, you know, he must have created some problem for the management, and the management have, you know, faced some difficulty because of that. So that's why probably, you know, they did not want him to be invited again. Something like that may be there, or probably. So see, the thing is, what I'm trying to say is there should be cooperation between. See, Chaitanya Murari Prabhu should also understand that management is actually the final authority in the temple. So if he is not able to satisfy them, then they also cannot, you know, he also cannot expect that the temple will make some arrangement for him. Okay, so that has to be understood, because management is a different thing altogether. Okay, management has to be there because that's what Prabhupada wanted. And if he's not comfortable with the management, then he can go and join some other temples. So now who is right, who is wrong, I don't know that. Okay, but the main principle of these kind of issues is cooperation. Okay, so he has to adjust, and the management should also adjust. Okay, so there should be cooperation, and they both have to cooperate with each other, and then they have to, because ultimately, see, the goal is preaching, and for preaching purpose, we have to sacrifice our, supposed to be the best servant. So if the leader or the management people will think that just because they have a high position in the temple, then, you know, they can do anything they want, that is also wrong. Okay, and should also understand, and he should also respect the management. If the management is humble, naturally the devotee will feel inspired to cooperate with them. But if the management is, you know, really arrogant, you know, setting good example, then you know, it's up to the devotee to decide. And by taking blessings of Siksha and Diksha Guru, he can also change his temple. He can go to some other temple and do seva. So in any situation, the service actually should continue, you know, whichever temple we are.
The 4 subscribers you have called, put you on hold. Please stay on the line. Dial *111# and get amazing data, talk time, and recharge offers from Vodafone.
Okay, yeah. So anyways, you know, this is a, like, it's not very detailed, but it's just an overview. The main principle is to cooperate. So because I don't know what's happening in the temple, what is the scenario, what is the situation, I cannot comment on that, who is wrong, who is right. So that is something that they have to decide. Okay. So Moipu, is that fine?
Yes, Prabhuji, I got it.
Yeah.
I got it around.
Yeah, so see, in a big institution like ISKCON, obviously we will be having authorities. And those authorities might not be spiritual authorities. Okay, so they will be the management authorities. And that is the reason we have this you know, parallel lines of authority where we have to satisfy both of them, you know, and satisfying both of them means, you know, we are satisfying Prabhupada. So that is what, so the GBC understands that, you know, the GBC should take humble position and the gurus should also take humble position. Otherwise, because of the conflict between the guru and the management, you know, the disciples will suffer. So that should not happen. So see, every leader, every guru, you know, everyone is meant to be servant. If someone will think that because I have a position,
the subscribers you have called, put you on hold, please stay on the line. Dial *111# and get amazing data, talk time, and recharge offers.
So what I was saying is that if someone will feel that, you know, just because he has a position and he has become a leader, so he can exploit, so that kind of thing will ruin and that will actually destroy the spiritual culture in the temple. So every devotee is supposed to be a servant, you know, they have to cultivate.
Subscribers you have called, put you on hold, please. Stay on the line. Dial *111# and get amazing data, talk time, and recharge offers from Vodafone.
Acha, who is getting call in between? This is the third time actually someone got a call.
Yeah, sir.
If you can just ask them to call after 1 hour or something. Okay. So let's go ahead. Tilak and Tulsi Beads.
Yeah. Tilak and Tulsi Beads. In the Padma Purana, there is a statement describing how a Vaishnava should decorate his body with tilak and beads. Persons who put Tulsi Beads on the neck, who mark 12 places of their bodies as Vishnu temples with Vishnu's symbolic representations, which are the 4 items held in the 4 hands of Lord Vishnu, crowns, mace, disc, and lotus, and who have Vishnu Tilak on their foreheads, are to be understood as the devotees of Lord Vishnu in this world. Their presence makes the world purified, and anywhere they remain, they make that place as good as Vaikunth.
Yeah.
Similar statement is in the Purana, which says persons who are decorated with Tilak or Gopi Chandan, which is a kind of clay resembling fuller earth, which is produced in certain quarters of Vrindavan, and who mark their bodies all over with the holy names of the Lord, and whose necks and breasts there are Tulsi beads, are never approached by the Yamdutas. The Yamdutas are the constables of King Yama, the Lord of Death, who punishes all sinful men. Vaishnavas are never called for by such constables of Yamaraja. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the narration of Ajamil's deliverance, it is said that Yamaraja gave clear instructions to his assistants not to approach the Vaishnavas.
Vaishnavas are beyond
the vodafone subscribers you have called put you on hold. Please stay on the line. Dial *111# and get amazing data, talk time and recharge offers from Vodafone.
Vaishnavas are beyond the jurisdiction of the Emirates activities. The Padma Puran also mentions a person whose body is decorated with the pulp of sandalwood with paintings of the holy name of the Lord is delivered from all sinful reactions. And after his death, he goes directly to Krishna Lok to live in association with the Supreme Personality of Lord.
Okay. So, I forgot to mention about the third point in the previous item about blasphemy. So, there are three ways to deal with someone who is going to blaspheme the devotees of the Lord. So, one is that we have to defeat that person in argument. If he says something, then we have to correct him. Okay. Otherwise, what recommendation the Shastra is giving is that, the blasphemer's tongue should be cut and then one should, die also. So that's the second option. And the third one is that just to run away from that place. One should not hear, continue. So obviously for us, if the other person is willing to listen, then we can try to convince him and we can argue with him and we can defeat him in argument. So if that is an option. Second option, obviously we are not going to do because we don't want to die. Neither we want to kill that person. Right? So that option is not for us. And the last is to run away from that place. If the person is not hearing us, then just go away from that place. Because even by hearing blasphemy of Lord or the devotees, we are actually involved in offenses. So that's how we have to do. Okay. Yeah. And now regarding the Tulsi and
Tilak. The phone subscribers you have called put you on hold, please. Stay on the line. Dial *111# and get amazing data.
Harimol, who's this?
Someone is calling or someone is keeping the line on hold.
Yeah, so probably someone is calling and that is the reason why. So humble request.
Suji, I have one question.
Yeah, I just want to make a humble request. Whoever is getting a call. Please, answer them and I hope it does not repeat again because it's almost 5 to 6 times now.
Suji, I have a question.
Yeah.
If unknowingly, means I'm not unknowingly doing offense, but unknowingly I'm doing offense to any exalted person, devotee of Krishna, can that apradh is calculated in our karma or... in akarma or vikarma, it will be a calculated akarma, if not vikarma, it will be calculated as vikarma. So it will be calculated as vikarma or not?
Karma, akarma and vikarma. Okay, so three types of karma. Okay.
Haan.
But offenses, right. Offenses, what does offense do?
Offense means if I commit... Offenses means saying something bad about
What is the result of offense? What does offenses do?
Destroy the spiritual life.
Correct. Yeah. So that is the first thing.
Right.
It will destroy the spiritual life. So whatever bhakti you have got, that will start going away. Okay. It's like analogy is given of mad elephant that... elephant goes in the lake, he will take bath and then again he will come outside and then he will roll in the ground. So what is the use of that kind of thing? The elephant, if there is a mad elephant, then whatever comes in his way, he will destroy everything. So similarly, offense is like a mad elephant. Whatever you gather, pious sukriti you gather through your bhakti, everything starts going away. So what offenses will do, first of all, it will take away your bhakti. And second thing is it will give you distress. So that distress can come in the form of karma. Okay, you might start getting some additional karma, which you did not have earlier. So that's what Vishwanathar Thakur says, that offenses to devotees can cause distress. Okay, So it can affect, it will surely affect spiritually, but it can also affect materially. Because it is said in Shastra, in the Bhagavatam, that whoever commits offenses to great Vaishnavas, so everything they lose, their pious life, you know, their duration of life, their, you know, pious deeds, material opulence, everything they lose. So offenses can have, they can, it can take away everything. Whatever material opulence also you have, that can also go away. So that depends on the intensity of the offense. If it is very severe, it will just destroy everything, material, spiritual, everything. If it is less severe, it will take away, you know, some bhakti. And materially still you might be the same. Okay, like that. So does that answer your question, Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhu. Thank you very much for your nice answer. Sorry,
okay, yeah. Yeah, so, okay, regarding the tilak and tulsi deed. So now obviously, you know, Prabhupada is also, he has been very strict on this, that all the Vaishnava devotees should always have tilak and kanti mala, right? So now, and obviously as we have already read that, see, these are all sastric evidences which gives the result of putting tilak and kanti mala. So all these things, you know, they will give us spiritual strength, you know, all these activities, all these items of devotional service. But now sometimes we see that certain devotees don't wear tilak and kanti mala all the time. So is that fine? Is that okay? Like we see sometimes that some sannyasis also, they do not wear kanti mala. Or sometimes they do not wear tilak.
So we are not wearing tilak and kanti mala because I eat onion garlic.
Yeah, so, okay, alright, we'll discuss that case later, but I wanted to know, is that okay? Like not to wear tilak and kanti mala?
After initiation, Prabhuji, it is a must, you have to wear. Till initiation, it's you can get away with it, but after initiation, you have to do it.
Okay, and in what cases can we compromise on that? In which situations?
In case you are coming, they don't allow you to, like they are very, in that case, you can put in, through water, you can put the tilak and all, not with chandan.
Yes, that is, yeah, that's a good answer. That for preaching purpose, like for example, in some countries, if you go, then we are not allowed to put tilak or, you know, maybe the people might not appreciate us like that. No, they will feel that we are trying to convert them, or, you know, we are here for some, you know, conversion purpose. So that is the reason we have to, according to the circumstance, according to the situation, we have to, if preaching purpose, if we are compromising, then it is all right. Then it is okay. But if we, you know, if it is not our desire, then that is not right. Okay, so a devotee will always wear kanti mala and tilak wherever they will go. They will not, because, why? See, it is because then Yamdutas will come when they see the tulsi neck beads and the tilak, they immediately recognize that here is a devotee. So they will not touch them. Okay, so that is the reason. Here, it is mentioned that the Yamdusas are constables of Yamuna who punishes. Vaishnavas are never called for by such constables of Yamraj. So this is the identification of a Vaishnava, that tilak and tulsi is always there. Okay, so this is how we understand. And now coming to Sumit Prabhu's, you know, question about, he's not wearing tulsi and he's not putting tilak. So, And he's not doing it because he says that he's eating onion and garlic. So now, what is your answer? What do you all think? Should he wear? Still, should he wear?
Prabhuji, Kanti should not wear because it's connecting the neck. When he eats an onion and garlic, it will be touching it. But tilak, he can wear.
Okay. Any other... Yeah, any other opinion on this?
So eating onion and garlic, Prabhuji, then they are not following the four regulatory principles, no?
Actually, onion garlic eating does not come into the four aggregate principles.
Correct.
Correct.
Actually, you know what? I will tell you another thing, that many Vaishnava, you know, so-called Vaishnavas.
I think at the time of initiation, when we took the oath, we said that we will not eat meat, whatever, all those things, which include onion and garlic, and no intoxication, which includes tea coffee. This is what was said, I think, and I have heard it in many times.
Yeah, but it is not, it is not regulative principle. It is not regulative principle, right? Because the four regulative principles are different. So this is something we abstain because these are in the category of more of passion ignorance.
Hmm.
Right? Actually, during my initiation, my Guru Maharaj did not ask me to take a vow for that you should not eat onion and garlic. I was just asked to, 16 rounds, four aggregate principles, and to be a servant of servant of servant. As we all know, Radha Maharaj's main emphasis is servant of servant of servant. So that's what Maharaj said. And then Gopal Krishna Maharaj, he asked devotees to chant 25 rounds on Ekadashis. I think so. That's what he asked my wife to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So different sannyasis, they have different things. But it does not come under regulative principle. Okay. So it is not that, if you eat onion and garlic, you are going to break the regulative principles. So it is not going to be so severe. Okay. We abstain from that, because after initiation, obviously, see, in that sense, if you see, what to speak of onion and garlic, there are many other items that also come in the category of mode of passion ignorance, which we might also consume sometimes. Okay, like spicy, if we eat too much spicy, that also becomes passionate. So if devotee has taste for that, then it will also become like that. So anyways, so I think all of you are saying is a common thing that tulsi neck beads one should not wear, right? And tilak we can still put. As far as I understand, all of you are saying that we should not wear tulsi neck bead, right? If you are eating onion garlic.
Because the tulsi beads are pure, na Prabhuji. So onion garlic is touching the neck, na consider also.
Okay. What about others? They are also have the same opinion.
We should not also. We are this tilak.
Okay, why?
We are offending devotees. We are offending devotees because devotees means if you eat onion garlic by applying tilak on the head, then they will say, this is devotee of Krishna and eating onion garlic, then it will be make a wrong reputation towards Krishna.
Okay. Yeah, so see, okay, any other devotee has any other opinion on this? Or any...
Because basically, it is want to, that we, to signify that we want to go back to the Godhead. Because it signifies his Krishna's lotus, two lotus feet and tulsi and down. So, I feel it can be allowed. Because his basic thing is he wants to go back to the Godhead.
Yeah, yes. So now you are according to, for preaching purpose, you are trying to adjust your views. So you have come down to your requirement of, wearing tulsi mala.
I also want to say something, that my mother follows Sri Ram Sarnam ashram near my home. And her guru does not say this, that one should not eat onion.
One should not?
One can eat onion. So onion does not create any problem in bhakti. So I want to ask that if we eat onion, we cannot be a tulsi mala.
Yeah, so that is what we are discussing here, that if you are eating onion and garlic, so can we put kanti mala? So what is the answer? Like, okay, any other devotee?
To permit, can I say something?
Yeah, sure, Madhuri, please.
Prabhuji, we are taught, I mean, through Bhagavad Gita in chapter 12 or 13, it's mentioned also that we are supposed to partake only the prasadam, mahaprasadam, what is offered to Krishna. So since we, onion garlic is not offered to Krishna, we are not supposed to take it.
Correct, yeah, yeah, of course.
Prabhuji, in this book it is said, their presence, that is Tulsi and Tilaka, makes the world purified, and anywhere they remain, they make that place as good as Vaikuntha.
So now you think, you know, so,
it is a purification process. You are committing so many sins. So you are taking the protection of this by doing this.
No, but you can't do like that. No, you can't.
But in books does not say that if you eat onion garlic, you cannot put tulsi in.
Babuji, I had a point. I was thinking about this. I read your post about the fish eating in many parts of Bengal. So
yeah, yeah, okay.
I mean, we are all offensive. Even if we try our hardest, inevitably, we will be committing some offense. You know, I mean, I think about this a lot. You know, even when we're breathing, we are killing so many, you know, microorganisms, even with our breathing. So what to speak of other offenses, you know? So in Kali Yuga, I mean, we can't really be offenseless. And in a way, I think when we chant, then isn't that kind of helping us becoming free of the offenses? I mean, we can just go to extremes, you know, and still be committing offenses. So I don't know, at what point do you draw the line?
Yeah, so very, very good point, Mataji. Thank you for sharing. See, that is the reason I was trying to, you know, ask all the devotees to share something on this topic, because different devotees have different views on this. And now, you know, like initially, you know, Saroja Mataji was actually saying that we should not wear, but now, you know, and now Sakshi Prabhu is saying that, you know, we should probably wear, because Tulsi itself is very purifying. So it can also purify, you know, it can act the other way around also, right? In fact, I would like, you know, let you know that in my own case, I was always wearing Tulsi Mala, you know, when I started coming to ISKCON. And till before the time of initiation, I was also having onion garlic. Not so much, but to some extent, because I was in US and, you know, there were no options, you know, in terms of like food, because here in Bombay, like, you know, we can eat so many things and facilities are also available, right? But in the US, you know, it's like we are always looking out for some Indian food, you know, because we cannot just keep eating bread and, you know, butter all the time. So then sometimes, you know, we feel that, okay, let's go to an Indian restaurant and let's have some Indian food. So, I mean, I'm talking about the earlier days, you know, just beginning days of my Krishna consciousness. And I used to wear Kanti Mala because for me, it was extremely important, you know, because I was attached to Tulsi Devi. And I could not imagine that why should I, you know, remove it from my neck? Because that devotion matters ultimately. Okay. So in, and that's my view, you know, like, I don't know, different devotees, they will have different views on this. And someone will not suggest, someone might suggest also. So for me, as Sakshi Mohan Prabhu was saying that, my thinking was also the same. I was also always thinking that to have Tulsi on the neck, it's so auspicious, so purifying. At the same time, I was also attached to Tulsi Devi because I was also, you know, born and brought up in a Vaishnava family. We are like, you know, followers of Srinathji. And in our family tradition, all of our, you know, family members, especially those who are, you know, inclined to worship Krishna, they will all have Tulsi neck beads. So even if they are eating onion, garlic and all that. So that's like, you know, traditional. And it is going on since many years. So for us, you know, for me, it is very natural to wear Tulsi Mala all the time. And I am not wearing it to burn off my karma. See, that is not the purpose, because then it becomes an offense. Like, just as, you know, one of the offenses to the holy name is to commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the holy name. Like, you commit the sinful activity again and again, thinking that Hare Krishna will burn off my karma. one of my, you know, reactions to the sinful activity. So that is not the intention. The intention is that I chant Hare Krishna because I want to love Krishna, and you know, I cannot be without Krishna. If that is the intention, then, you know, I think that is perfectly okay. And I, as Jugnu Mataji said, you know, a very wonderful point, that in Kali Yuga, it is not possible to get rid of all offenses. You know, there are so many offenses. As we, you know, in the last class only we discussed, there are like more than 60 offenses in Seva Aparad and 10 offenses in Nama Aparad. To get rid even of one offense is so difficult in Kali Yuga. What to speak of, you know, trying to follow each and every, you know, getting rid of each and every offense. So I think the most important thing that Krishna sees is what is the intention of the devotee, you know, and also having the faith that Tulsi is very purifying, you know, in my case, you know, after initiation, you know, I never even thought about onion garlic. I never had onion garlic, you know, so I consider that probably, you know, it was a purifying process for me, and my guru never had any problem with that, because, you know, like, Radharath Maharaj's mood is, you know, he always sees the devotion, you know, of the disciple. Like, he will only focus on the high, you know, good things. So he never, in fact, you know, I will tell you something, you know, that Radharath Maharaj, he hardly has spoken to me. And in a matter of 1.5 year, he also gave me initiation. You could not imagine, but I will tell you that even before initiation, you know, as a devotee, I was also wearing leather jacket. And I was not aware, you know, that I'm wearing a leather jacket. So it is only after, you know, when I went to Tucson from Florida, then later on the devotees actually started reminding me that, you know, I am wearing the leather jacket, and I was not able to understand, you know, like, so what is the significance? Because I thought that, you know, I'm not killing animals, or I'm not, you know, like, doing anything wrong. But then when I came from Tucson to India, you know, Krishna's arrangement, what happened, I forgot my jacket, you know, in the temple. And I already left from the airport. So then later on, I understood that, yeah, you know, I was actually I was, you know, a part in the, you know, sin, because to wear leather jacket is also actually not good. You know, we are also incurring that karma. So, and then Krishna so expertly, you know, he made me, you know, purified of that thing, you know, so expertly. So Guru Maharaj never saw that, you know. He just saw that I was humbly trying to please the temple authorities. I had served many god brothers of him, and they all recommended me to him. So he just saw that thing in me. And believe me or not, but later on, all these things gradually all were purified. You know, I gave up everything, you know, and I understood what I should not do and all that. So it's a matter of time, you know, gradually, if our intentions are clear, if we just want to serve and love God and serve the devotees, I think rest of the things will follow automatically. You know, everything will happen gradually. So this is how Krishna deals with us. You know, he is very expert. He's very kind, very merciful. And at the right time, you know, he'll make us realize many things. So that's my personal realization and understanding on this. And I would say to Sumit Prabhu that he should, you know, still wear it, because Tulsi is extremely important, as we know that it's one of the 5 limbs of bhakti, the most important 5 limbs. Out of the 64, the 5 are the essence. And to stay in Vrindavan, in a holy dham, that's one of the items. And in some other places, Rupa Goswami replaces that with worshipping Tulsi Devi. So wherever Tulsi is present, you know, because Tulsi Maharani is very, very dear to the Lord, you know, like, she is right at the lotus feet of the Lord. So we see in this particular evidence, you know, Yamdutas cannot even come nearby wherever there is Tulsi. So obviously, you know, we don't think that putting Tulsi neck will save us from Yamdutas. Our main goal is to actually always be attached to Tulsi Devi and seek her mercy all the times. So if that is the intention, then Tulsi Devi will certainly purify us. There is no doubt about it. Okay. So I hope so this makes sense.
Babuji, I had a follow-up question to what you just said. It does make complete sense. And I was just thinking, you know, culturally, you have also lived in the United States and you have lived in India for most of your life. And many of us have done the same thing. We've been in both countries. I do notice the approach to bhakti as being a little bit different. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. I don't know if you had any thoughts or if you've noticed anything. I feel like, you know, when I was in India, it seemed like things were more strictly done, adhered to. It's like, I've got to do this, you know. Whereas the approach in the West is a little bit more relaxed. That does not mean that they are not doing the right things, but they I don't know how to say it, but they seem to be a little bit more lenient and easygoing towards bhakti. That does not mean they're not serious. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, perfect point, Madhuri, perfect. So this is the same thing that I also realized, that in the West, things are very relaxed. And I think that is because part of the culture also, because the Western people, they don't like to interfere, you know. And at the same time, if you come to India, in different parts of India, then in India, there is a tendency that, you know, everyone would like to interfere and they would like to, you know, advise or, you know, give correction. So that is actually, I think, you know, majorly because of the culture, you know, cultural difference. And at the same time, if we do not consider these factors purely on a spiritual basis also, we have to understand that according to Vaishnava etiquette also, devotees should not look at the faults of other devotees. Okay, so they have to be strict with themselves, but they are supposed to be very lenient with others. So this is the principle according to Vaishnava etiquette also. So So in the US, that's an advantage because they never, like, you know, I was under Kalakant Prabhu in Gainesville Temple for almost 3 years. And I never had, you know, Kalakant Prabhu never criticized me or chastised me for anything. In fact, he always encouraged me and he always glorified me, you know, for anything I did, you know, small or big. So, one more reason is because that in India, the preaching is growing very fast. But in the Western countries, the preaching is going very slow. So mostly the Indians are only joining. They are becoming devotees. You see, the purpose of preaching in the West is to attract the Westerners. But what is happening is more Indians are only joining there. So obviously, the temple authorities there, they have to be more lenient. Because if they become strict or forceful, then, you know, that will drive away all the people who are actually trying to become devotees. So, and as we already know that in the Western world, you know, to have illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, these things are like very common, you know, it's like kind of a culture. So to break away from that normal culture and come to altogether a different culture, it's very difficult. So obviously one has to be very tolerant and one has to be very lenient. So the authority is supposed to be very lenient there. So in that sense also we can understand. So yeah, so there is some cultural reason and then there is some preaching reason also, because of, you know, which this leniency is more observed in the United States. And as Indians, you know, we are used to taking advice from our elders, from friends, relatives here. So you know, when we come to India and then, you know, the devotees start pushing us, they start advising us. So that's a very common thing. And, you know, we are used to that. But for some Westerner, you know, it's a bit difficult thing. So I think in spite of, you know, the culture differences, we have to always remember what is the Vaishnava etiquette, which is the highest principle. Okay, and that principle says that we have to be strict with ourselves, but we should be very lenient with others. So we should overlook the faults of others and we have to look at our own faults. So that is how we have to understand. Yeah. So does that make sense, Madhuri?
Yes, Prabhuji, absolutely. And I just wanted to add one last point to that. And I have personally done this. I have, you know, we have, the way we've grown up in India, Prabhuji, I feel like if we acquire certain knowledge or we learn, know something, we want to share it with others. We have this innate nature, so we want to share it. So we will give our opinion very freely. Oh, you should do this, or you should be like that. When I first moved to the United States, That was the very first thing I needed to stop doing. No American ever told me what to do, how to do it, anything. Nobody, not once. And I have to check myself over time. I have improved. but this is a tendency that I have. And when I go back home, I notice the same thing in our family too, you know, in people surrounding me. We all have this tendency. I don't know. It's a cultural thing.
Yeah, of course. So obviously we can understand that it's actually mainly influenced by the culture, how we are raised in the family. And see, all these things are coming from, ultimately they're coming from Shastra or the Vedic culture, because India is actually Vedic culture. Originally it's supposed to be Vedic culture. Okay. But the things, they have deteriorated. See, the problem in India is that everyone wants to give advice. Everyone is expecting that their son will be like Lord Ramchandra. But they don't want to be like, you know, perfect role models like Dasharatha Maharaj. So that is the problem. In India, although, you know, all the elders will, they will try to enforce, you know, so many cultural things from the Vedic scriptures, you know, to their followers. But then they don't themselves follow that, you know, like that is the biggest drawback in India. So I think we have to see, you know, through the eyes of Guru Sadhu Shastra. So otherwise, you know, what will happen is we'll just be attached to our own values and culture. So we have to be open-minded, you know, we have to accept what the Shastra says, because that's the original culture. And everyone used to follow the culture. So that's how, you know, it was a perfect harmony, actually, you know, in the previous yugas. So that's how, you know, we understand that in Kali Yuga, there will be, like people will say things, but they don't follow that. So that will always have an effect on others. So basically, you know, we understand that the leaders are supposed to be idle, you know, like if they are following what they are saying, you know, they are practicing what they are teaching, then naturally all the followers will also take to the same thing, you know. See, the biggest drawback in India or amongst the Hindus is that, you know, all the elder people, they teach us, you know, to do temple worship and all, to do the rituals. But because they do not follow themselves, that is the reason, you know, the descendants, they will never, you know, strictly follow, or they will not worship God, you know. Whereas you see in the case of Muslims, you see the parents themselves, you know, they are so strictly following. And by seeing that, the children are also, you know, accustomed to follow that. So it is very natural. That is the reason Muslim population is increasing so much. And Hindu, you see, no one even knows who is God. No one can even define who is God. So that is the reason the Muslims are able to easily, you know, kind of fool the Hindus, you know, through the movies and through other different types of ways. They're easily able to capture the minds of Hindus. Like you see, Dr. Zakir Naik, he openly gives a class, invites all the Hindus and different people from different places. And he gives, you know, he gives elaborate lectures on the Vedas, Upanishads and all that. He will quote so many slokas from Bhagavad Gita, from Upanishad, from Rama and Mahabharat. And then because the Hindus do not know, you know, their own culture and their own scriptures, so they are easily confused. And they will think that, okay, you know, ultimately God is impersonal. So that's how, you know, this system is such a drawback in India, that we, because we don't follow, and obviously then we cannot expect our descendants will also follow. So it is the grand responsibility of the parents that they have to set a good example for their followers. Otherwise, we cannot expect, you know, people don't want Muslims, you know, in India. Like, you know, you ask any Hindu, they will say that they should all go to Pakistan. They don't want that. But at the same time, what they're doing for that, personally, they do not want to do anything. But they just want to blame the government and, you know, blame others. So this is what, you know, how we have to take responsibility, each and every one of us. So that aspect of following is extremely important. Yeah. So, yeah. So anyone has any comments on this or like to share something?
Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
In Muslim community, they are very accustomed to perform devotional service. But in Hindu community, they are not accustomed. Why is this so?
So that is what I'm explaining.
If we are telling Hindus to perform devotion, we will do this devotion service at the age of 75 or 80. We will not do now because I want to enjoy the lust, enjoying pop or bar or somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's only that they are Hindus is walk like this. So Hindus can attend the devotional service.
So that's what I've explained, because problem is that, you know, when the children, they see their parents, they're not following and they are also going for movies, clubs and bars and all. So naturally the children will also not follow properly, right? But in case of Muslims, it's not like that. It is very strict. You know, the parents are wearing, you know, the mother is wearing burqa, you know, the father is wearing that white cap on the head, and he's also wearing that kurta, you know, white kurta and pant and all that. So when the children, they are seeing that the parents are so strictly following, the naturally they will also follow. So you see, when we travel, I see many Muslims, you know, small children also, they are wearing that kurta and, you know, that cap on the head. And so it is all, you know, it's all what you see, you become like that, you know. And because in our culture, that following aspect is not there. So that is the reason, because, you know, everyone is misled, you know. There are so many gurus, so many demigods, which one is supreme and all these things are there. But for them, it is more like, you know, they believe in impersonal aspect of God. So there is no question of a personality. There is no question of personal God, right? So the confusion is also very less. And then, you know, they only believe in Prophet Muhammad. And, you know, they are, from that time onwards, you know, they are strictly following that principles. So the chances of getting misled is more in amongst Hindus, because we don't have a proper system of, you know, the knowledge which is flowing down and the people who follow that. Okay. Yeah. So.
Obviously, is it because Hindus have become more educated and they are going abroad and all? Is it because previously even we had now this following system, like they were pious children.
Now, yeah, but see, okay, the difference is, although we might be pious, but still there were so many impersonal tendencies in us, right? And see, it is only after Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's appearance, you know, this knowledge of bhakti or the real devotion started appearing. Prior to that, there were so many, misconceptions, so many different kind of religion were propagating. But it was Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and obviously Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, they played a major role. They had actually laid the foundation for Srila Prabhupada to spread the movement. Okay. So, and then you see, even at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, there were so many impersonalists, there were so many Mayavadis. Right? So, yeah, so it is all, you know, you can say that it's influence of Kali Yuga in one sense, because, it started with the coming of Lord Buddha. And then came Shankaracharya. And then after that, you know, came all the four Acharyas, Vaishnava Acharyas. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came. So it's kind of influence of Kali Yuga ultimately. You know, that's why we are not following. And as we already know, during Prabhupada's time also, when the Britishers were invading India, so that time also, that was the beginning, you know, how Indians started getting attracted to the Western culture. And, you know, it is very interesting to know that I think Lord Macaulay, who was one of the prominent parliament members in the British. So he was the mastermind to break the spiritual culture of India. And his realization was that India is such a strong spiritual culture. If we break that culture, then it will be very easier for us to, influence them. So that's what he did actually in India. He actually broke the spiritual culture. So by and how he did that, you know, by establishing Western schools and by teaching, you know, something which is not related to spiritual life, you know, all these things came up. So yeah. Yeah, so anyways, you know, like this is a discussion which is not connected to our main topic of discussion, but our main topic was, you know, wearing Tulsi Mala. And this is my, you know, personal opinion that, I mean, I would recommend to any devotee, you know, who is sincere and who is, you know, who wants to progress in spiritual life. So even if he is eating, you know, onion garlic, but yeah, ultimately, you know, one has to give it up. You cannot continue, you know, that desire has to be there, that one should give it up. So yeah, so all these things, they are always purifying. Whatever is connected to Lord is always purifying. So does that make sense to everyone? Like,
I have one question. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, I have one question.
Yeah.
Prabhuji, you said that the Malaysian devotee is sincere, that he can be a Tulsi Mala. If he is sincere, like in my home, my mother put onion in the vegetables. And but I do daily give water to Tulsi plants. And very devotional to Tulsi plants. So can I be a Tulsi Mala, but if devotee can, will take it as, will not take it as an excuse that you said that any devotee who is sincere, he is onion, that he can be a Tulsi Mala, but devotee will take advantage of it and they are not doing any insult to Tulsi Mala.
See, basically, our topic in onion garlic. It's not that, you know, we don't think about onion garlic. We have to stop that at some point of time. If that is the intention, and if there is, because of circumstances, if there is no option, genuinely no option, then why not? You know, why? I think one could wear Tulsi Mala. I mean, you know, with time, and I think we have to pray also to Tulsi Maharani that, you know, please make me free from eating onion and garlic. No, we have to have that intense desire. So by some arrangement, you know, Krishna might help us through Tulsi. If we get the mercy of Tulsi, then Krishna will help us. So in that sense, it is purifying. But, you know, if we wear Tulsi Mala and purposefully if we eat onion garlic, you know, even if there is an option, then that is also offensive to Tulsi Mala, to Tulsi Maharani. Right? So both ways we have to think. So if the intention is good and if because of circumstances we are not able to give up onion garlic, although we want to give up, then I think we can wear Tulsi Mala. You know, with time it will purify us. You know, we can pray to Tulsi Maharani also. So this is my understanding. So I don't know, you know, different authorities, spiritual authorities, they might suggest differently. So it's just a difference of view, you know, like devotees can have their own, you know, differences in this regard. So anyone would like to?
Is there any Shastric Praman of this that, but what you are saying that it is written in any Shastra or written?
See, the problem with Shastra is that, like, you know, as in the last class, one devotee, Mataji, she asked about, you know, what is the significance of wearing red garments? Because in one of the offenses was that one should not wear red garments before the deity of the Lord. So now you see, when you are talking about Tulsi Mala particularly, then you should also speak about other things, right? We have to follow everything. See, we cannot just take one thing and focus on that. Then there are do's and don'ts in all so many things. Right? So then, how to understand? Because as Jugnu Mataji was saying, in Kali Yuga, we cannot avoid offenses in one sense, you know, that's logical. Like, each and every activity that we are doing, there is some offense, you know, some offense will be connected to us. Okay, so some sinful activity will fall upon us. So that is the reason our main focus is to please the Guru, spiritual master, whatever he says, that whatever standard he gives us, that we have to follow, we should try to follow. Okay, then only, you know, we are in a safe situation. Otherwise, it is so difficult to understand from Shastra. Now, Shastra talks about so many things, you know, many, many things. Like, you know, you can't even go without the dhoti and kurta in front of the Lord. If you go in on jeans and t-shirt also, if you go to a temple, I mean, in one sense, that is also an offense. Because, you know, the Lord is so great, and, you know, when we go to a great personality, we have to dress according to His need. We cannot dress on our own, which the Lord does not like. So if we wear, three-fourths and if we go to the temple, then, the Lord will not be pleased. Someone can say the Lord is not pleased, because it is mentioned in Shastra. So, but then if you say that the Lord is not pleased because someone is going in t-shirt and jeans, then you are also trying to negate another Shastric injunction, which says that the Lord is very pleased when someone goes to the temple and takes his darshan. Right? So then, which is the higher principle? So we have to look at the higher principle. The higher principle is the Lord is always pleased when the devotees, they go to the temple and take his darshan, because he sees the bhav. That is the most important thing. He is seeing the bhav of each and every person, with what intention they are coming. So that is the reason we cannot identify a Vaishnava. Just by externals we cannot identify. Our devotee might have perfect dhoti, kurta, kanti, mala, everything, but his consciousness might be somewhere else. In his mind, he might be committing sins. He might be thinking of so many other things. But another devotee, he might be wearing t-shirt and pant. He might go to the temple and his focus is only on the Lord, how to please Him and how to serve Him. So which is more important, the external or the internal? So the internal aspect is obviously more important. Right?
We should judge everything practically, not only theoretically.
We have to judge according to Guru Sadhu Shastra. So sometimes, many times we might not be able to understand how to judge. So then we have to take guidance of devotees, our authorities. And by learning from them, regularly hearing from them, by learning from them, then we will also learn how to judge situation. Okay, and then we'll become expert in that. So that is how the process works. That is the reason why we have authorities. So we have to learn from them, we have to serve them, and they can impart knowledge because they are realized. So that's how, the system is. So that is the reason I said, again and again, that authorities are the most important, gurus, spiritual authorities. So we have to learn from them. Yeah? I hope, yeah, so that makes sense.
Yes, Prabhuji, yes. I'm 100% agree with you.
Okay, so any other devotees, they have any, questions or any doubts about this? Or someone would like to express some other opinion? Sakshi Mohan Prabhu, Saroja Mataji.
No,
basically, our conscience should be clear, isn't it, Prabhuji?
Yeah, that is the essence of bhakti, basically. See, what can we do? What service can we render to the Lord? He is infinite. We are just trying to please our Guru Jan. That is the only thing. See, we don't want to chant 24 hours a day. Okay, because our chanting, will be what? It will not please the Lord unless it is, filled up by the mercy of the devotees. Because our level is not, we are very low. We are very fallen creatures. So what can we do for the Lord? Nothing. Yesterday, when I went to the Pushya Abhishek in Radha Gopinath temple, so I met my friend who is a brahmachari, and we are discussing about Ayendra Prabhu, that what his level of devotion, intensity of devotion was. He was telling me that in Vraj, there are extreme climates, extreme winter and extreme summer. Okay, so in that situation also, to live in Vraj for so many years, itself is a very big thing. And on top of that, Ayendra Prabhu, when he started the 24-hour kirtan, he was single-handedly doing it for many years. And when there were no devotees, he used to do kirtan for 16 to 17 hours. And you know what? I will tell you that when winter time, you know, that there is naturally a force to, you know, follow the, you know, nature's call, correct? So while doing kirtan, Ayendra Prabhu used to control that nature's call. You know, he did not want the kirtan to be stopped. And what happened because of that, when he went for the nature's call, he was actually passing blood instead of urine. That was an intention, you know, so intense devotion. That is called bhakti, you know, that kind of stage. Sadha, see, sadhana bhakti is that, like that, you know, it is, we compare to the satyug, the way they used to do austerities and meditation and tapasya in the satyug and tatayug. So that is real sadhana. In Kali Yuga, there is no sadhana. In, you know, in one sense, everyone is a kripa siddh. Because our sadhana, what, you know, what we are doing, 16 rounds is what? Nothing. Nothing. It is like, you know, not even a cup of tea for the Lord. So he is actually, you know, you see, it, the mercy is actually coming from Prabhupada. Actually, you know, we are going to go back to Godhead because we want to, you know, we are all striving to please Prabhupada by spreading the Sankirtan mission. Okay. So what, see, that is the reason a devotee should always be humble, because, you know, what pride is there, you know, what we have done in our spiritual life, it's all coming by grace. So why have we have to be proud of something? It's all coming by grace of the Lord and the devotees. So there is nothing to be proud of, actually. So all these things should make us more humble, actually. That, you know, I was able to do this, I did this, you know, because it was the mercy of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. Okay, so spiritual life is actually, you know, very deep thing. It is extremely deep. It is, you know, like what we are doing is only superficial, external. But actually, you see, the level of the Braj Gopis, you know, we speak about, oh, we want to have Madhurya Ras, highest. We just want to have highest. But where is our level, you know, at the lowest? And we are always aspiring highest. Because the material world, we are designed like that. That we don't want to do anything, but we want the highest thing. Okay. And highest thing also, you see, the Braj Gopis, when they were compared with the Dwarka Mahishis, when Narad Muni tested them, you know, the I think all of you must be knowing that example of how Krishna got a headache once. And then Krishna told Narad Muni that you go to the Mahishis and you go to the Gopis and you tell them that my headache will go only when I collect the dust of your feet. So then first Narad Muni went to Dwarka Mahishi. Okay, and Dwarka Mahishis, when they heard that, you know, Krishna's headache will go when we give our dust. So all the gopis were afraid. They all thought that, well, you know, who wants to go to hell forever by giving our dust to Krishna? So they did not give. And when Narad Muni went to the Vraj Gopis, you know, all the gopis, you know, they all came forward and they said one thing, that even if for a moment, if Krishna gets relief from his headache, then eternally we are willing to go to hell. This is the level of Vraj Gopis, and you know, we are trying to aspire for that. So you know, if we get a little bit suffering in this world, we will be so disturbed. We'll say, why Krishna, you are doing this to me, only me, you know, I'm the only devotee, there are so many other devotees also around me, why you're not doing to that devotee, right? Immediately that thing will come up. So that's how, you know, we understand that our level is very low, and what destination we are getting, it's only because of causeless mercy of Vaishnavas. Okay. So any comments on this?
No.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So let's go forward.
Accepting flower garlands. The next instruction is that one should put on flower garlands which are offered to the deity. In this connection, in the 11th canto, 6th chapter, verse 46 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Uddhava says to Krishna, My dear Krishna, I have taken things which you have used and enjoyed, such as garlands of flowers, saintly articles, garments and ornaments, and I eat only the remnants of your foodstuff, because I am your menial servant. So therefore, I am sure that I shall not be attacked by the spell of material energy. The purpose of this verse is that for any person who simply follows these rules and regulations of decorating the body with the marks of tilak, of Gopi Chandran or sandalwood pulp, and who puts on the garlands which are offered to Krishna, there is no question of being conquered by the spell of material energy. At the time of death, there is no question of such a person being called by the constables of Yamraj. Even if one does not accept all the Vaishnava principles, but still takes the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna or Krishna Prasad, he will gradually become qualified to rise to the platform of a Vaishnava. Similarly, in the Skand Purana, Lord Brahma tells Narada, "My dear Narada, anyone who puts on this neck, on his neck the flower garland which was formerly used by Krishna becomes relieved from all disease and reactions to sinful activities, and gradually he is liberated from the contamination of matter."
Okay, so it's almost 10:12. I might get disconnected probably in a few minutes. I will call back again. See, now, you know, what we're discussing is kind of, you know, is what Prabhupada is also saying here. If you see, you know, Prabhupada is saying, even if one does not accept all the Vaishnava principles, you see this? And then he says, but still takes the remnants of foodstuff offered to Krishna, he will gradually become qualified. So in one sense, about the Tulsi Mala is kind of connected to this principle that, you know, the bhav is the most important thing, and this is the glory of each and every item of devotional service. Actually, each and every item can grant us, you know, can bestow us, you know, they can, each and every item can take us back to Godhead. That is the, you know, glory of each and every item. So that is the reason you see here Prabhupada is clearly writing that it's in the Bhagavatam, it says that, my dear Krishna, I have taken this thing you enjoy, and you know, and I eat only remnants because I'm sure that I shall not be attacked by the spell of material energy. So you see, this is the glory of this particular item, and each and every item is so potent because everything is connected to Krishna. Okay, now sometimes we might feel that, you know, but you know, I have also received the garland so many times. No, Mahaprasad garland or Mahaprasad. I've got it from, you know, spiritual master, his Mahamaha and all that. But still, you know, I get attracted to the material energy. So why is it like that? So sometimes you might have this question. But, you know, here it is saying that I'm sure that I should not be attacked by the spell of material energy. So how do you understand these things? Is there a contradiction? See, there is no contradiction. Actually, this item, you know, if it is done offenselessly, see, each and every item, whichever is done offenselessly and which is maintained throughout in that spirit, will give the same result. Okay, will have this maximum potency. So what happens is, although we get the mercy of the Lord, and that mercy can deliver us, you know, at that point of time, but what happens? When we continue our bhakti, we also commit offenses. And that is the reason we fall down, you know. We fall down from the offenseless platform to the offensive platform. So that is the result, the potency will be covered with time. Okay. So let's say, for example, if someone chants the name of the Lord and he does it unknowingly for the first time and he dies at that moment. So then the Lord will immediately send Vishnu Dutas, you know, to give him another chance, just as in the case of Ajamil. Okay, but if that same person, if he does not die, and after that, you know, he comes to bhakti and he starts performing bhakti, then from offenseless stage, he will, you know, he might fall down to offensive state, right? So that is the reason he will not see the full effect of the, potency of the holy name. So that will be covered. So similarly, we have to understand all these items, they also get covered because of offenses. Otherwise, each item is actually, you know, very potent to take us back to Godhead, because it's all non-different from the Lord. See, when we say that things related to Krishna, right? In that Anya Bilasida Sunyam Gyana Karmadhyan Navritam, when we started that verse, we say that things whichever is related to Krishna, they are also more potent than Krishna. You remember the example of the milk which was, you know, boiling, and Yashoda Maya, you know, left, she dropped Krishna and she started running, and you know, she wanted to somehow she wanted to you know, that boiling milk, she wanted to protect that from overflowing. So that was also devotional service because it was connected to Krishna's pleasure. Okay, so similarly, whatever paraphernalia is there of the Lord, whatever things related to his body, they are also very potent. They are as good as the Lord. So they also can bestow the same result, whatever the Lord can bestow. Okay. So this is how we understand that we should not be bewildered, and we should not think that, you know, Shastra is just an exaggeration. Whatever the glories are there, it's exaggeration. It is not like that. Each and every item is potent. Okay. So that is the reason. See, and one more thing is very important to understand that initially we might have that faith that, you know, some devotee will say,
आपण ज्या उपभोक्ताला कॉल केला आहे त्यांनी तुमचा कॉल होल्डवर ठेवला आहे. कृपया लाईनवर रहा. द सबस्क्राइबर यू हॅव कॉल्ड हॅज पुट यू ऑन होल्ड. प्लीज बी ऑनलाइन. आपने जिस उपभोक्ता को कॉल किया है उन्होंने आपके कॉल को होल्ड पर रखा है. कृपया लाइन पे बने रहिए.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I got dropped. Is we have to understand that sometimes, you know, we'll have faith that, you know, we got the Mahagarland of the Lord, but then we'll see that, you know, it's not having any effect on us. So we should not be bewildered. You know, we have to always have greed to, you know, whenever there is opportunity, we should take blessings of the Lord. You know, we should take Mahagarland, we should take Mahaprasadam, we should take Charanamrita of the Lord. So by continuously doing these activities and having faith, that will make us on the stage of offenseless platform. Just by these activities, again and again, repeatedly. Okay, so because the Lord will see that, you know, this devotee is always having faith. So at the appropriate time, he will give the result of that activity. Okay, so this is how we have to understand. So any questions or any comments on this? Okay, so we can also continue now.
Can I continue, Prabhuji?
Yeah.
Okay. Dancing before the deity. In the Dwarka Mahatmya, the importance of dancing before the deity is stated by Lord Krishna as follows. A person who is in a jubilant spirit, who feels profound devotional ecstasy while dancing before me, and who manifests different features of bodily expression, can burn away all the accumulated sinful reactions he has stocked up for many, many thousands of years. In the same book, there is a statement by Narada wherein he asserts, from the body of any person who claps and dances before the deity, showing manifestations of ecstasy, all the birds of sinful activities fly away upward. Just as by clapping the hands, one can cause many birds to fly away, similarly, the birds of all sinful activities which are sitting on the body can be made to fly away simply by dancing and clapping before the deity of Krishna.
Okay, so did you hear this, Sakshimohan Prabhu?
Yeah.
So now will you dance in the temple next time?
Now I have to force myself to dance.
Yeah. So see, dancing, actually, see, why one has to dance before the deity? Because if you are not dancing, it means that you are not joyful. Because any person who is joyful, you know, the last stage is to dance. in that joy. Okay, so if one does not feel that kind of ecstasy in, you know, then we have the one should actually try to dance, you know, even in.
लाईल केलेला क्रमांक सध्या दुसऱ्या कॉलवर व्यस्त आहे. कृपया लाईनवर राहा किंवा.
यस प्रभू, टेल मी.
ऍक्च्युली इन टर्म्स ऑफ एनर्जी आय एम मोर देन इक्वल टू एनी वन हू इज डान्सिंग. द ओनली प्रॉब्लेम इज कृष्णा हॅज नॉट गिव्हन मी द स्किल टू डान्स, दॅट इज व्हाय आय डोंट.
या ओके, या स्किल इज यू नो डज नॉट मॅटर, द लॉर्ड डज नॉट सी द स्किल. वी हॅव यू नो व्हेरी सिंपल स्टेप्स. Anyways, not, you know, it's not that, you know, I am personally trying to, you know, target someone, but it's only that dancing is one of the items of bhakti. And if we dance for the Lord's pleasure, then also we get the mercy. And as we know that, that also destroys a lot of karma. Okay, so now see, for a devotee, the devotee should understand that we are not so much concerned about karma, because see, we don't focus on karma when we are doing bhakti. We don't expect that the Lord will destroy karma for us. And that is the purpose, you know, I should dance for the Lord, or I should clap because so many karmas will go away. We clap and dance for the pleasure of Lord. And whatever sinful reactions the Lord wants to destroy, that is His choice. Okay, we don't demand on the Lord. See, these things are generally given to attract the materialistic people, the karmis basically. You know, when the Shastra says that, you know, if you do this, you will get this result. You know, you get some kind of punya, and your sinful activities, reactions will be destroyed. So that is actually meant to attract the karmis, basically. But for devotees, it is only the pure devotion of the Lord, you know, which is going to attract the devotees. So this, I hope this everyone understands. Yeah? Okay, so anyone has any question or any comment? So what should we do? Should we continue or should we stop? It's almost 2 hours. I mean, more than 2 hours, I think.
Probably can we continue next time?
Yeah, so is everyone there or many devotees have dropped?
Or maybe Nidra Devi is attracting them.
Yeah. So, is everyone there?
I'm there, Prabhu. I'm here, Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
Okay, everyone is awake, actually. Wow. Yeah. So, if you know, if we were all together, then dancing was the only option which was remaining. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so any final comment or any question before we wind up? Mohit Prabhu, you are there? Sumit Prabhu?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, Sumit Prabhu is there. I think Mohit Prabhu might have left. So any devotees would like to comment anything? Okay. All right. So I think next week also, I think we'll have the class on Sunday, because on Saturday, like, I have to give some presentation to our group devotees. So maybe I will not be available on Saturday. So Sunday we will be doing it. So, okay. All right. So then, thank you so much for joining. We'll have...
Next Sunday, there will be some kirtan in the temple by Father Prabhu. 4:30 to 8:30.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. It will be there, but I think I will be doing the class. So, because Saturday, I won't be able to do it. So then, Sunday is the only option. So... yeah, anyway, devotees who want to go and attend, they are, you know, they can definitely go. But those who would like to attend the class, they are also most welcome. So, yeah. Okay, all right. So, thank you so much for joining. Hare Krishna. Dandavat Pranam to everyone.
Thank you, Prabhu.